Blog Talk Radio.
Most of the time, you don't have to think about what to do. You just go ahead and do it.
From the Temple of Truth, the Willie Lawson Show, here on Blog Talk Radio. From the Temple of Truth, the Willie Lawson Show, here on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon and good evening and good morning, whenever you're listening. And welcome to the Will Austin Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you being here. It is a special day. And it isn't just a special day because Thanksgiving is tomorrow. And Thanksgiving is tomorrow. And as much as it's about family, that's cool. And as much as it's about food, you're listening to a fat guy. So you know what? There ain't many meals that I have pushed away from the table on. So it is rather wonderful. It's about giving thanks, and it's about giving thanks to family and friends and blah 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 and all that stuff. But you know what? It's about giving thanks to God that we can get up this morning and do what we have to do. What He would have us do. That we would have the strength. That we would have the clarity of thought, the clarity of mind, the pureness. Such as we have to do what we need to do. That's what it's about. And he continues to bless us, and he continues to keep us, he continues to protect us, he continues to chastise us and correct us. He continues to love us. That's what it's all about. That's what Thanksgiving's all about. I don't have something as cool as Linus's speech to Charlie Brown in a Charlie Brown Christmas about what Christmas is all about. And we're going to play that too around Christmas time too. So because people get all caught up in that Christmas is about Best Buy, somehow Christmas is about the Macy's parade, Best Buy, and Santa Claus. So that's all jacked up. So we're here to straighten y'all out. Today is going to be a fantastic day. We are going to keep moving in our general theme. And I know some of the people on the left are saying, well, you're just complaining and whining. No, we're not complaining and whining about anything. As a matter of fact, we've moved on, in a sense, from the 2012 elections. We're going to talk about them today, but we're going to talk about them in the light of what to do moving forward. And who missed what and who doesn't know how to do what, that's what we're going to do. Oh, my goodness. Golly, Shirley Huzar is in my chat room. Holy moly. Now I gotta be good. Now I gotta not suck at this. That's for doggone sure. Our guests are we in the line? There's a lot of folks, quite frankly, who have been in the because our focus is the failure of the Republican Party historically in the urban community. And it wasn't as apparent, or it wasn't any more apparent than it's ever been this particular election season. All you gotta do is look at the maps, drill down the numbers. Doesn't take very much to do to find out that the failure was in the urban community. The frustration is that a lot of us told them. We said, hey, listen, in 2009, if you don't get into the urban communities with a strategy. That first of all, doesn't have anything to do with politics. It has to do with gaining credibility in those communities. You're going to lose. And, here's a whole truckload of I told you so. But after that, we're coming up with strategies by which that you and I can get involved in the conservative urban initiative. And today we have somebody who's been in this struggle for a while, folks. And is an amazing voice in the urban community as a conservative black man, because it's so important. It's not because we want to be different, because being this different is freaking hard. It ain't always fun, but it's because we love our community, we love our people, and we want to see both our communities and our people. And our people are our friends and our family. We want to see them thrive. So without further ado, I think we're going to bring on the top number here, which is the 3093 number, is Nandra Enzi. Nandra Enzi, are you there? Okay, I'll try the other number. Is our guest there? Let's try the other number. Is our guest there?
Yes, have no fear. Captain Black is here. How you doing today, bro?
Man, you know I'm doing whatever I can, however I can get it done.
Well, that's the words we live by, and I just wanted to say thank you, and I'd like to dedicate this particular appearance on your show to Congressman Alan West. I think somebody symbolizes a lot of what we've been individually struggling for years.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, we live in a mixed up crazy time when somebody like Alan Grayson can be a representative in the U.S. House of Representatives, and Alan West cannot. And if anybody has put it out there and done all he could do and given so much, it's Alan West. And because I live in Florida, I'm going to promise you have not seen the last of Colonel West. But again, thanks for hang on a second. There you went away. Let me see if I can find you again. No worries. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I got you. All right. You're absolutely right. So listen, again, thank you for being here today. I was reading moveon.org, and I saw a post that you had written, and we'll get to that in a minute. But it just spurred me because I'm having this conversation about drug laws with somebody who's a libertarian and how they affected our community, and my common sense said, hey, I got an idea. Don't break the law, and give them the chance, knowing full well that you're under the gun anyway. You know that. They give them a chance, and it was has to do with self-criminalization. But I want to talk about that later. Listen, the election. I look at the election, and I look at the maps, and I said, you know what? That was a lack of an urban strategy by the GOP. A lot of us yelled about it in 2009. A lot of us yelled about it in 2007. We've been yelling about it for years. What was your take on the 2012 election?
My take was that the Democrats had a coalition of people. You had white people who were brought to their knees by this economy. You had Latinos who were promised amnesty. You had gay Americans who were promised marriage. And this most unlikely of coalitions, in fact, I would say the most diverse liberal coalition since FDR's ruling majority, united for one thing and one thing only. They felt that life preserver that the Democrats were handing them was intact, and the one that Republicans were handing them had a hole in it. And the hole was austerity and tax cuts that they did not feel was going to serve their individual benefit. And while I don't think this is a repudiation of conservative principles in any way, shape, or form, I do think that it's a recognition that the America that perhaps some of us grew up in, who are baby boomers of Generation X, may not necessarily be the America that we find ourselves in today. Yes, conservative principles, traditional values, old school values, as I say in the black community, have not disappeared, but they are being challenged by a level of deprivation and desperation that our generation have never seen. And that was, in a nutshell, that was my take on the election results.
Well, you make some great points. Again, we looked at all this, and my deal on this show has always been, okay, we've diagnosed the problem. It's sort of like the patient has come to us, and we're the doctor. We've diagnosed the patient. What do we do now moving forward? And in our community over the next few months, because you mentioned Alan West, he's conceded, and he is now out of Congress starting in January. What are we? I mean, I'm not looking. Some people are looking at the 2016 elections. I'm looking at 2014 because it's sort of my feeling is that if The Republicans sort of, if they lose the House, I think the Republican Party is going to be irrelevant for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I think also, and I've always promoted this, yes, we need bipartisanship. Yes, we need more black people in the Republican Party. But even more importantly,
mm-hmm.
as a distinct American community, we need what I call coalitions of concern. When people, regardless of your party, your sectarian, or your other affiliations, unite around community issues, the fact that we have a deficit in mentoring, the fact that we have public safety issues. See, these things, while many of us who are more right-leaning will blame liberal policies for it, at the end of the day, we can get together our people to effectively address the fact that too many of our children do not have fathers and too many of our young men are modeling themselves after thugs and urban terrorists. If we can address that, we will achieve, I think, far greater results than exclusive focus on partisan politics. I want us to change the culture and unite around the old school values that many of us are raised on that may not necessarily be as popular as political affiliation at the moment, because mm-hmm. we've got to deal with the GOP, but we've also got to deal with what's happening on our street corners and at our dinner mm-hmm. tables on a daily basis.
That's so true. Well, I you know what, I agree. And when I go, you know, my wife and I participate in our community, but when I, you know, people ask me, I heard you were Democrat. I heard you were Republican. Yeah, I'm Republican. Yeah, whatever. And I kind of try to blow it off. Because that's not the most important thing to me. The most important thing to me is that 70% of our kids are born out of wedlock. We've got an HIV/AIDS problem in my neighborhood. The worst schools are in my neighborhood. The most crimes in my neighborhood. And that's what I really care about. I care about that way more than anything else. So,
and the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. And you mentioned this. Other communities' bottom line. They look mm-hmm. They look at the condition of their community. And then they pick and choose from a menu program of coalitions on how to best solve the problems in their communities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing that, or am I missing it in a lot of black communities? Because you know what, they're picking from A and B, but it seems like over I'm 52, over my lifetime of noticing, things have not gotten progressively better from some of the choices that our communities have made.
And I'm 46, and the point is, let's be very honest. NAACP, the Urban League, our houses of worship, our faith denominations, our social civic fraternal organizations have been, I feel, subjected to an end run culturally. See, the minimum amount of time that our children spend in public school, the time they spend in their homes, seems to not be as formative as the information they're getting from rap music, from TV, and from many of our depressed neighborhoods. And our children are being programmed into being thugs and worse. And that's an issue that you can't lay at Mitt Romney's feet. And obviously that's not an issue that seems to be of any particular importance to the Obama administration. Though we, you know, vote in the high 90 percentiles for them, let's be very honest, neither party has forwarded a plan for addressing urban male issues, and guess what? It's not their job to do so. It's our job. You know, these are our brothers, whether we like them or not in some cases. And the people that they will kill and make miserable long before it gets to uptown is going to be downtown with us. You know, this is our, you know, the hood is the black community's Normandy beachhead, and we're either going to put them in the high ground, we're going to get pushed back out to sea, but it's going to be our battle to lose, and it's just that simple.
Here we had the whole Trayvon Martin thing, and as sad as that was, what was sadder and what continues to be sadder to me is that actually Trayvon was more likely. I mean, that he was killed by a white man is sort of almost an anomaly, because he was more likely to be killed by somebody who looks just like him.
Check this out, bro. Within the past 3 weeks, God is my witness. I'm putting my right hand in heaven right now. Two brothers I know were murdered.
Oh, Lord.
2 weeks ago, Sunday. I just found out yesterday that the son of a sister I know in my hometown of Savannah, Georgia, me and Clarence Thomas were raised and escaped from the same town.
It's funny.
was murdered. All right? The suspect list does not include the Aryan Nation. It does not include the skinheads. It does not include any incarnation of the Klan, nor Al-Qaeda. Al-Thugum, these Negroes who have run wild in our community, have killed three black men with whom I'm peripherally associated. And, you know, we can do a national tally and just seeing how many black men were killed within the same time period and how many of the suspects are also other black men. This isn't trying to blame the victim. This isn't trying to assist or give aid and comfort to white supremacy, but being honest about a problem that is in our midst. And Trayvon Martin, I feel very strongly that he was stalked by George Zimmerman.
I agree.
And Zimmerman should be punished to the fullest extent of the law possible. And, because this isn't a zero-sum game, and the same way Al Sharpton and his group occupied the corners a few months ago, which I supported, against black crime, is the same way we need to be occupying our corners, our streets, our houses in some cases. Because remember, these cats are coming out of somebody's household.
That's the truth.
We have got to face urban crime with the same deliberation that we faced the Klan in the 1960s, because these brothers are killing us. And we need to stop making excuses for it. Because guess what? The cavalry is not coming from the White House, from the State House, or from any other house but our house. And we got to accept it. And that's why I'm out there every day. Because when I'm talking old school values, like, bro, you know selling crack, you know carrying a gun without a license is not helping you when you blame society, saying that society is racist, but you do everything you can to put yourself under state supervision, that's where the message needs to be. It's fine to be in the five-star hotels, but we need to be out here on the streets also, because this is where our destiny is being written, and regrettably is being written in blood on too many occasions.
What's missing? A while ago, I used to work at a junior high school. That's how long ago it was. It was called a junior high school, and a lady who worked there said, "You know what? We marched with Dr. King." And she looked at, and she was, and it was in a black, you know, we worked in a black neighborhood. And she said, thinking about those children who went to the school there, predominantly black, said, "What happened? What happened to the work that we did?" And even in my youth and my ignorance, I said to her, "Because you guys went home and you started your lives, and you didn't tell us the story. You didn't relate the stories to us, meaning myself. So now we don't know what to tell these children." What's the missing part? Because we seem to have missed a few generations. What happened?
Well, I humbly submit, brother, that our civil rights establishment refuses to acknowledge. So see, when crack first hit in the 80s, I'm 46, you and I grew up in a world that still had two-parent households, still had a certain decorum where you didn't use profanity. I don't care if you were standing on the corner selling drugs, a little old black lady walking by, guess what? You said, "Good afternoon, ma'am, good evening, ma'am. Can I take your packages?" That's how the drug dealers in my neighborhood was pre-crack, all right? Crack hits, and suddenly you have a normative structure where instead of older men being the breadwinners, and remember, our grandparents' generation was also starting to die out in the 80s. So instead of a paradigm where you had older men being the standard bearers and the wage earners in communities, now you've got young men with guns and more money than they've ever seen before, out earning men much older than them. And as addiction sweats into the older age demographic, and what's unusual to see a man who would be old enough to be their father, uncle, or grandfather running behind them and begging them for drugs. So the older generation died out just at the time that crack hit, and that a very violent and unsocialized younger generation rose in ascendancy. And they took over the popular music. Because you remember when we were listening to hip-hop, stuff like Africa Bambaataa, Curtis Blow, Run DMC, Public Enemy, the whole Afrocentric music trend that they ushered in. All that ended when gangster rap came, because the paradigm went from somebody wearing a Malcolm X medallion around his neck to somebody having a gun stuck in his waistband and his pants hanging off his behind. And our civil rights community, which has always been focused on white wrongdoing, because that was a prevalent paradigm
yeah.
that we were fighting, is uncomfortable. I'm a life member of the NAACP, and I remember asking my NAACP president here, I said, brother, do we have a committee, because he was listing all the committees I had, do we have a committee on black-on-black crime? He looked at me without blinking an eye and said, no. This is in New Orleans, Louisiana, where our attrition rate, our fratricide rate, sometimes leads the nation per capita. And that's not just unique to the NAACP. I feel that if we do not have the same level of focus against urban crime, then we need to form, I feel, new organizations that are addressing today's priorities, crime prevention, school choice, public order. You know, because regrettably, I love the NAACP, and I became a member for two reasons. One, because I owed it to them for what they did in the past, and two, because I knew I'd get fed up with them.
And the only way to change it from the inside.
At least my name would still be on the books.
And then you could come to meetings and tell them what was up. That makes sense.
Crime and school choice and order. See, these are the civil rights issues of today. And we can focus on what racist white people are doing to the exclusion of what's destroying us in our community, or we can, I feel, have a much more balanced approach. And I would love for the NAACP, the Urban League, the SCLC, Rainbow Push to be along the lines of Congress for Racial Equality under Roy Ennis.
Mm-hmm.
Address these issues from a more, if you don't want to say conservative, because I know we start breaking out in hives sometimes over that word.
Yes.
From a much more, I tell people, I call it concern perspective. Because if you're concerned about the black-on-black violence, if you're concerned about the atrocious public school conditions, if you're concerned about the really vulgar behavior that many of our young people think is authentically black now, then guess what? We need to unite around these issues. And whether it's within established civil rights organizations, or whether it's within organizations that we have to create to address these issues, we need to do it regardless. Because these problems are not going to be solved from the top down. They've got to be solved from the grassroots up.
Yeah, and...
So go ahead, bro.
No, and because I look at it from not the outside in, but the inside out. Because even from the heart of people who work and live and love in the community, it's got to start happening inside of each of us to have the courage, because it seems like, because some of these problems are so prevalent. I'm not dogging anybody out, but there's a courage issue, because some of these areas are frankly dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous to speak out against some of the influences that are happening in these communities.
And you know what? I say bring it on. Because if I got to die because I don't want chocolate Klansmen terrifying me the way Mega Evers didn't want white Klansmen terrifying him, then so be it. Because the bottom line is we still have to address it, whether you're scared or not. And as a black male, you still have a much higher chance of dying from violent crime, so you might as well die on purpose instead of getting zapped with a Twinkie in your teeth. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot Twinkie's gone out of business. Getting zapped with a donut stuck between your teeth, not knowing where it came from. You know, we do not have the luxury of inaction. I mean, I'm sorry, we don't. And it's sticking our heads in the sand and hoping against hope that this problem would disappear, would have happened, then our statistics would have improved a while ago. And just like when a lot of commentators said when Obama was first elected, see, now our young black men have a new role model to look at. Our behavior hasn't changed.
No.
There's not this army of cats with short haircuts and suits and ties who are saying, I'm modeling myself after President Obama.
No.
That individual buy-in that old school values and conservative values presents has not happened, and it will not happen until we, the stakeholders, demand it. You know, we have got to tell these brothers, as I tell them every day, that the same way you blame society is the same way you offer yourself to society in the form of your criminal behavior. And if I don't tell it to them, who's supposed to say it to them? Because when the police officer catches him engaged in this behavior, he's duty-bound to arrest him. When the prosecutor has him in front of him in the courthouse, he's duty-bound to prosecute him. If he goes to jail or prison, the officials there are duty-bound to supervise him. And if he's on paper, quote, state supervision as a parolee or a probationer, then guess what? The staff there has to supervise him. So it needs to come from us. We have to provide an alternative to this ignorant, destructive thug culture that not only kills our people, but also makes inner-city people so afflicted as bargaining chips that liberal politicians use to get voted. Because let's be very honest. The same members of the Congressional Black Caucus, minus Tim Scott, we'll say, who talk about the inner city and the terrible conditions there, you couldn't put a gun up to one of those Negroes' heads telling, well, let's go in the hood. And why don't you talk to some of these kids? Why don't you mentor some of these kids? You know Justice Thomas has young children year-round who come to his Supreme Court offices so he can show them in real-world terms that it doesn't matter where you started in life, this is where you can end up, or it's equivalent. You know, we got a compassion deficit. And the other end of conservatism that people don't talk about, self-reliance on one hand, mutual aid on the other, you know, rendering unto your brother out of your pocket instead of the taxpayer's pocket. That's conservatism also.
Yeah,
in Harlem as he was in the Heritage Foundation, and that's the conservatism we need to be practicing.
Yeah, this whole idea of compassion, you can't force me by law to be compassionate. You can only be compassionate and giving with what you have, not with what somebody else has.
If I reach in your pocket and take out your wallet and count out your money and give you back what I think you should have, are you inclined to appreciate the process?
No.
Will you feel the love or will you feel anger?
I'm feeling a little anger you're right. But you know what? By the same token, if I take my wallet out and I choose to give everything I have in there to somebody, you know what? That's a much better deal. And individually, as black men and black women in our community, we can do this individually. However, is there an organizational structure that we can, because a lot of people now, I'm telling you, in their own communities, being either afraid or ignorant, won't know how to identify with folks. They won't know. I mean, because a lot of people have separated. A lot of black people, frankly, have separated themselves out. They have either moved. I didn't move. Yep. I love when people dog me out about being conservative, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I live 5 minutes from where I grew up. I can go anywhere. Y'all went to the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. Well-adjusted people. And, you know, I'm not married and I don't have children, so I don't blame somebody when it says, look, black, I can't have my children dodging bullets every day. And I can't blame them. But my point is, let us at least, have an exchange program we can try and get other people's children out of these high crime areas, or something I promote, urban pioneering in reverse, where we occupy the inner city with middle-class black professionals and force the culture change that we need there. Because right now, too many of our kids don't see anybody engaged in any type of productive activity. You know, when my folks grew up, when I grew up in the neighborhood, you had homeowners, you had professionals, you had business people. Now our children have crack dealers, crackheads, and empty buildings around them. And is it any wonder? You know, all for personal responsibility, but I also have to acknowledge the role that one's environment plays.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of our kids, bro, they're not meeting people like you.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You know, it was always interesting that you mentioned that, man. Is I remember being little, I had a black doctor. I knew black attorneys, even as a little one.
Yeah.
I grew up, I knew black doctors. I knew black nurses. black attorneys, accountants, everybody who did professional functions where I lived were black, really. The first school I went to when I got to Florida was all black. The principal was black, the assistant principal, everybody was black, and everybody, you know, and all those people wore ties and dresses and frankly did give us and were really good about telling us that, you know what, that those were sort of the role models that we, and a lot of us, a lot of people, you know, who are my age around here, we aspired to. We respected them.
But, you know, our churches still have youth groups. We still have groups like 100 Black Men.
Yes.
And the Boys and Girls Club. Our challenge is to either re-energize these groups by joining them or, in concert, creating new organizations that can address even this more urgent need we have for more mentoring, for more intervention. Because, once again, if you really think that the folks in Washington, D.C., or your state capital are tossing and turning at night saying, oh, wow, what are we going to do to help the inner-city children? I'm sorry. That's not even on their bottom 50.
No.
It's our responsibility. And I do what I do. You do what you do. We just need to do more and definitely to do it with greater organization and greater urgency because – you know, the crisis is growing. More and more of our children are growing up not even having what we would consider to be givens. You know, a lot of them may not even have a caring parent. There may not be a man who's not a felon within five blocks of their houses in either direction.
Yeah, true. True.
And, you know, this is the stuff we've got to address. Instead of obsessing about whether or not Willie Lawton is a Republican, we need to be worrying about why is it old school values, traditional values, our grandparents' values are not being represented in the community. That, to me, that seems to be a much greater consequence than what button you pressed when you went to vote, if you even voted. If you're even able to vote.
Because they have F at the end of their names. And so they're not able to vote, and that's a whole other situation. You know, but as we're talking about this, something that I personally encountered when I talk about old school values, the values of my grandparents and my great-grandparents, it's, you know, and I don't know if you face the very same thing, it's a concept a lot of folks, a lot of our kids don't understand because their experience is such. They've never experienced it. They've never seen it. You said, they live in an area where there may not be, they live in a community of felons. So they've never experienced it. So if you've never experienced something, it's really tough to be convinced by it.
It's you and I are increasingly talking about a world which to many of our younger peers trying to come up through this, it's the equivalent of hieroglyphics. You know, a world of somebody like Paul Robeson being the most famous black man or somebody like Thurgood Marshall. Yeah, that's something that's equivalent to pointing to hieroglyphics on the wall in the museum and saying, well, hey, this is how things used to be. That's where the intervention and the mentorship becomes so vital because our kids are not getting old school values. They are not getting exposure to these types of pro-social norms, and if we don't shoulder this burden to provide this intervention, then we're going to have to arm ourselves against a younger generation with no type of respect for life because it hasn't been presented to them in their formative years. You know, brother, I have done thug management in nightclubs. I have done bounty hunting. I have done mentorship. I break up fights on the streets, and guess what? At no time do I see the villain of some white Republican running around the corner after paying everybody to act like this.
Yep.
You know, we focus so much on the white Republican boogeyman because it's easier, I think, to blame him than it is to deal with these very intimate and embarrassing issues that many of us don't want to talk about in public, but we have to talk about it because it's on the 6 o'clock news. Bill Cosby did not become a Republican when he blasted this segment of the community for what they're doing to Black America. All he was doing was being a concerned citizen and being honest about certain negative cultural trends, and that's what we have to do.
You know what? And you're right. And when Cos made that, when he talked about that at the NAACP meeting, and it was a celebration of Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Black people got upset, but I would remind them this is the very same Bill Cosby who tells actually a pretty touching story about in 2008 taking pictures of his mom and dad into the voting booth with him to vote for President Obama. This is the same Bill Cosby. This is the very same Bill Cosby. He's like you and I. He just cares about his community. He cares about his kids. He cares.
Bill Cosby has millions, with a big M. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars to historically Black colleges and universities. Most of his critics will not even walk across the street to check on their neighbors. Let's be very frank and very candid. Bill Cosby's call, Come On People, is one, I think he wrote a book about it also.
It's a great book.
His long-term collaborator. Why can't concerned brothers like Cosby and conservatives unite and say, you know, we have got to start providing our children with these old school values and stop quibbling over party affiliation in political parties that really are not even part of our communities?
Very true.
You know, if we don't win this cultural war, the Democrat Republican thing becomes irrelevant because wealthy Democrats, other Republicans, Democrats and Republicans with stable families and stable communities are going to fare much better than we are now.
Yeah,
there's got to be a two-front war: the cultural war on one end, trying to help provide decent norms in the inner city, and then the political war on the other end, making sure that we're represented in or on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I'm in a southern state. Most of the southern states are red states, and most Black people have chosen not to affiliate with the Republican Party, but they want to complain that they are not being represented. But you don't converse with the people, you don't go to the party meetings, but then you want to blame them. Do you really expect that Mitt Romney is going to jump in his limousine and ride down to the front and start hugging people on the corner and say, come on, I want you to join the Republican Party?
Okay.
The Democratic Party that we integrated in the 1960s did not welcome us with open arms. Everything we do as Americans who happen to be Black is done as the result of great effort on our part and with open-minded, decent people of other colors across the board. We got to stop thinking as outcasts, brother, and start thinking like Americans.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, we are where I live, and I don't know if it's the same way where you live or what you've seen around the country.
Mm-hmm.
In my community, there is a I call them the group of in East Tampa where I live, I call them the group of 12. And there are and there are Black people who are in not just in political power, but in areas of influence, I should say, positions of influence, that are looking at the things that we're talking about and the people who are talking about them as a threat to their position.
Of course, let's be very honest. The bad guys in this real life comic book drama called Black Life, they ain't all white. Many of our supervillains don't wear suits, don't wear outlandish costumes, they don't have crazy names, but guess what? Their ambitions are just as sinister. They want to dominate the Black community, and they do not want anybody to infringe upon their monopoly. And let's be very honest, a much more sane inner city, by default, would cost some people their control they have over the Black vote and Black culture, and they will fight it tooth and nail. I know conservative commentators who've had to leave their hometowns because the Black Democratic establishment has frozen them out of employment. It happened to me where I was. This is what we don't want to address. We focus so much on the wrong other people do that it gives aid and color, comfort under color of Blackness the people who are just as opposed to our progress as any outsider you can name. You know, black suffering has always been an American college industry, and for some of us, we were only activists because we wanted to integrate who controls suffering. We didn't necessarily want to end the suffering. We just want to get our chance to benefit off of it. And we need to call them for what they are and have that conversation also in the community and not be quiet about it.
You know, and because I think that's a force that you know what, that stopped a lot of folks from participating at a higher, you know what, at a higher and more intense level in the things we talked about in the mentoring and talking aloud about school choice and getting our kids out of failing schools into charter schools, into private schools, using vouchers, whatever tools that are available to help them, is because of people like my gang of 12, who basically run around saying, oh, no, and you know, running behind the scenes, undercutting you at every turn. You know, and it is really, really, you know, and I've experienced myself, as I'm sure you have. It's frustrating, and that's enough a lot of times, because people are still trying to make a living to keep folks from participating, and
I'm not frustrated because I understand. I've looked at this thing deeply and have been very active in addressing it, and I understand that, like with General MacArthur during World War II, the island hopping strategy. Sometimes if a place is too entrenched, if a mindset or a particular group or individual is just too recalcitrant and cannot be brought to a compromise with you, you need to skip him and go to people, places, and organizations that are more open-minded, and then maybe you can revisit them later. You know, let's be very honest.
Yeah, you're right. Make the end run.
There you go. That's what you got to do it, bro. Programs like your show, platforms like MoveOnUp.org, Facebook groups like Blacks and Afro-Americans, Mitt Romney, which has transitioned beyond just his campaign and now serves as a clearing center, a clearinghouse for commentary of great importance to our community. We are winning our great country back that Andrew Luck won. All, you know, forums like these allow us to network and exchange ideas and information so that you don't feel like you're out there fighting by yourself.
You know what, that is extremely, extremely important. And having people like you on this show and being able to take this show into perpetuity on the internet and forever exposes folks basically to, you know what, some people have never heard this. I have young people that I deal with all the time that look at me like, Willie, where'd you come from? And I said, I came from
Saint. I mean, think about it, brother. I like BET. I'm not hating on them.
Okay.
The BET universe does not include Negroes like us.
No.
Except perhaps as guests on Don't Sleep. And even then, not recently. I would challenge the black conservative community, we need to come up with our own networks. We need to, because you're fighting a cultural war where oftentimes you are relegated to a sideshow or a punchline.
Yeah.
You know, remember now, when you were talking about what people face when they try to even engage in this type of urban uplift, look at all the hate Stacey Dash got just for endorsing Mitt Romney. Look at all the hate Alan West got with these crazy people digging up old love letters of his to his wife and putting out videos of him beating up on white women. Now, and you know how racially charged imagery of a black man assaulting a white woman is. Did this come from the evil Republican Party? No, it came from your friendly neighborhood Democrat. And my favorite example, look at the high-tech lynching they tried to pull on Clarence Thomas because he dared to be a black conservative. See, we got to be honest about racism. Racism in America comes in at least two flavors, all right? Conservative, which we have discussed ad nauseum, and liberal, which many of us don't even want to acknowledge.
No. You know, it's, you know, you
keeps
you say
people quiet because, you know, healthy, well-adjusted people, unlike you and I, want to avoid all of this public confrontations. But like Alan West said, and I agree, bring it on. Because bottom, bro, I'm fighting for freedom, political freedom. Like the movie Runaway Slave. What does that brother always say, Reverend C.L. Bryant? Says, run hard.
Run hard.
Of course we have, bro. If people hadn't run hard in the past, you and I might, if we're really lucky, bro, we might be able to be shoeshine boys in some places.
That's true. That is so true. There are a lot of people who, you know, a lot of people who faced a whole bunch, frankly, a whole bunch more than most of us face on a daily basis.
And that's what I tell brothers. Okay, you and I, in our generation, bro, we are the first free black people born in America, okay? How can we walk around angry and engaging in antisocial, outcast behavior about how people are treating us when people like Thurgood Marshall, Charles Hamilton Houston, all right, Martin Luther King used the Constitution, all right, not Chairman Mao's book, not Das Kapital by Marx, but the American Constitution and the Judeo-Christian ethic to force this country to recognize our citizenship. How can we sit back and accept being thugged or scared in our households with this type of legacy? That's what we're fighting for. We are fighting for our right to be Americans, and just like we had to fight external forces who did not want to recognize our American identity, now we have to fight internal forces. No, I don't want you having stable two-parent households. I don't want you operating outside of our Democrat political bosses because now you're cutting into my money. That's what it all boils down to. Somebody black is profiting from the conditions that you and I and thousands of others around this country strive to change, and they must be challenged. And it's a lot bigger than just denouncing the ritual denunciation of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. Guess what? They are the only two doing it.
No, it's...
People in your hometown, people on your city council, people in the, perhaps even the pulpit, are profiting from this horrendous condition. And they may pay lip service to change it. They won't do anything substantive because then it affects their monopoly. And in free market economics, you know, monopolies are what people try to gain in the marketplace. You want the majority of the market share to go to you and not to your competitor.
That's exactly right. And you know what? And as I'm listening, I'm, you know, in my community, I'm seeing, as you mentioned, people in the pulpit, you mentioned people on city council and county commission. I'm actually seeing faces of individuals.
Well, I know.
You know, it's an amazing structure that they've built, and they're able to use it as a force against us, against their own people.
True, black people born in Generation X, roughly 1964 to what, 1980, perhaps.
Yeah.
We are the first generation who do not necessarily have to subscribe to the plantation paradigm that was forced upon our people. See, I don't denounce or criticize older blacks because let's face it, to rise up above servitude, whether you're talking about Dr. King's approach or Malcolm X's approach, speaks more about the human spirit and American principles than a lot of us are really ready to even acknowledge. And then to have a generation like ours born when many of the legal apartheid barriers in this country were reduced or removed, to have a generation like ours born, and now we've got to fight not some distant white man, not the White Citizens Council, but bourgeois, bougie black people to have servants. You know, we have to make the paradigm shift because we were born after the paradigm shift. So really, we're not obligated to be loyal to somebody who says, well, I'm black, and yes, I'm manipulating you and exploiting you, but you can't oppose me because I'm black. We don't have to engage in that. It's a different day now. We can denounce him the same way we denounced Bull Connor and all the rest who stood between us and full citizenship. It's just now Bull Connor looks like us.
You know what you mean? I think that that right there is a nugget that is so important that a lot of folks have to get. A lot of people in the black community have to get that just because the black from your single member district is sitting on city council or county commission or in some power of some position of influence, we don't have to fall in line just because
no.
you look like me.
No,
we just don't have to anymore.
On the plantation, since liberals want to talk, and even conservatives will talk about the plantation so much, all right, let's talk about it. What did the plantation master have as a buffer between him, the white overseer, and then you, the field Negro? He had his hand-picked intermediaries that he would use. And many of us looked at that governing model and said to ourselves, well, you know what? I can actually benefit from horrendous conditions. And let's be very honest. Our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation, when Dr. King would come to town, guess what? You had Negroes going to the White Citizens Council saying, here is what Dr. King and them are trying to do. Okay? We have never had the myth of the black monolith, the myth of black unity. You know, our generation has a chance to institute some real black unity because we've always had people who worked against the community's interests. And in our generation, we don't have to be silent about it. We can call it for what it is and just say, look, you are profiteering off of our people's misery, and it ends now. It has to. Because if not, do you really think these young brothers on the street corner, if they become, as they are almost at the threshold of being, the prevailing model for black male aspiration, mm-hmm. do you really think they're going to come and ask for the reins to be handed over to them? Do you think they're going to make an appointment with these guys' secretaries to talk to them about, you know, prevailing Negro conditions? Or are they going to shoot them? This is what we're facing. Our generation, brother, might be the last generation of racial diplomats.
Yeah. That's
tried peacefully correct some of these cultural issues that are tearing the black community apart as a prelude, bro, to overall American decline. Because Charles Murray wrote a book, and this book, you know, Charles Murray of Bell Curve Infamy, it wasn't dealing with black folks, it was dealing with the white underclass. Because these dysfunctional values are not just confined to us. This has become beyond a black problem, it's becoming an American problem. It's just that it is affecting us far more greatly because we have less infrastructure. We have less financial and cultural cushion to absorb hundreds of thousands or millions of people engaged in extraordinarily ignorant behavior. But all of America is suffering from this. We just happen to be the canary in the cage. We get it first.
Yes, very true. You know, and that was something else I wanted to ask. It seems like things are elevated and escalated to an amazing intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And you alluded to this. How close are we from losing this battle and losing this generation entirely?
I would say perilously close. I would say that between whether or not this is Tufts' last stand or any of the victories that we may name in American military history is perilously close. Because right now, our generation, we're in our 40s, we're in our 50s. We still have not fully embraced, I think, our identity as free people who can stand up and question somebody the same color and not be cowed in the silence by feeling that, like in the past perhaps, that public dissension aids white supremacy. See, it's black supremacy that's holding us down now because some group of black people have decided to place themselves over the legitimate American interests of our community. So we got to fight this, and we've got to be honest about it. Because if not, how much more murder, how much more illiteracy, how much more teen pregnancy, how much more disease do we have to take, do we have to endure before we decide that enough is enough? I mean, was it only me, but anybody note that during the Republican presidential primary, Newt Gingrich and Michelle Bachmann were talking about black male unemployment, but we had yet to hear that from the person who receives over 93-95% of our vote?
And is yet to mention it. I'm telling you, as a candidate, the president was in St. Petersburg, and there was a group of black progressives there. You might have heard of them. They're the Uhuru movement. Okay, so they actually had a banner in this gymnasium. They got the candidate's attention, and their representative asked specifically, what are your plans about assuaging some of the suffering that's happening in black communities around the country? And in a gymnasium full of black people, they were summarily booed for even asking the question. Mm-hmm. The candidate then, you know, addressed them in some sort of political, you know, usually politician way, which means he talked to them for 2 minutes and didn't say anything. Not just him, politicians, all of them do it. It's a talent they give them. There's a pill they give politicians where you can talk for 2 minutes and not say anything. And they put their sign down and they were respectful in the whole deal. But I watched that again and again, and I thought, he didn't address our problem. And what's frightening was that there was this myth that he was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to other black people, even now, even today, after the reelection of President Obama, there's this hope somehow that on high that everything is going to be okay, because now you have somebody in a position of power,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to take care of you. It's going to be okay. When the fact of the matter is, we've looked at our community and we've seen the very same thing in more of a micro thing in community to community, town to town, county to county, and it's never happened, and it's not going to.
No.
You have a black mayor and still have Detroit.
Detroit, Chicago. I mean, we can go down the list. And this isn't trying to denigrate black elected leadership, but it's just saying that the top down approach does not necessarily address our issues. I mean, so much of what we're facing, as I keep stressing, beating a dead horse, admittedly so, are cultural in origin. You know, the fact that our parents are not staying with our children. That's a cultural issue. The fact that young men are socialized to use violence and criminal behavior as the only, quote, black options, that's a cultural issue. You know, why is that so hard for people to understand, except that some people do not want the condition to change? And I'm not saying it's going to change overnight, because remember, now the world we grew up in pre-crack was not the world that we found ourselves in by the year 2000.
That's true.
But just like things could change for the worse in such a compressed time period, I think things could change for the better.
Because
it's a compressed time period, but you know, we've got to start singing, writing, talking, demanding old school values.
Because something happened, and mm-hmm. I worked in the school system here for 15 years. Something mm-hmm. happened where it wasn't okay for our kids to be smart.
Mm-mm.
It wasn't okay. It just wasn't okay.
That's why I like the title, if I could mention it, of another online radio show called Afro Nerd. And the picture he has is the young brother from Family Matters, being intelligent, was made to be unmasculine. And into that vacuum has come the same type of dysfunctional, destructive, illiterate mindset that people keep marketing to young black men. I mean, here in New Orleans, do you know what our Democratic mayor, Mitch Landrieu's suggestion is for reducing our atrocious gun violence rate? Midnight basketball.
Oh, here we go again.
As if when you put a basketball in a Negro's hands, he will not murder somebody.
You know, that's
coming from, this is coming from your friendly neighborhood Democratic Party, because a Republican wouldn't touch that with a 1,000-foot pole.
Are you kidding me? I mean, are we back to the Nixon days where all we need is a watermelon and some comfortable shoes?
Yeah.
Is that not the 2000 version of the very same thing?
Once again, we have become so silent about destructive policies that we feel comes from our elective and refuse to assert ourselves in a much more individual perspective and say, no, I don't agree with that. It does not meet the needs of myself nor people like me. So whatever group assessment you're trying to shove down my throat is always a dysfunctional group assessment. I have to challenge that. And that's what we have to do. I mean, where is it written that black people have to be the only group of Americans who have to just be quiet and sit and take it when people are promoting poisonous values and damaging ideas? And it would be frustrating enough if this caused arguments in our community, but this stuff is literally killing us.
True.
From a homicide rate on one end to lifestyle-related mortality and illness based on consumption of bad food, illegal substances, abuse of alcohol and tobacco. I mean, what more do we need to have? Do we need to just start dropping dead in the streets by tens of thousands before we get the hint that, you know what, we need to unite against this culture of death and place a culture of life at the center of the black community again and push all this negative behavior to the periphery, to the fringes, where it belongs?
You know what I mean? I've been riding public transit for about a month, just because, you know, just something I'm doing, and at the bus stops, I'm telling you, you mentioned tobacco. And I didn't think about it because nobody around me smokes, and I'm looking at black youth and how much they smoke, and I'm thinking, we are the group of folks in this country who have the toughest path to health care. We have more. I mean, we have. You know, we fight high blood pressure. We fight diabetes. We fight all these health problems, and now this culture is sucking death into their lungs in bigger numbers than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Hurts me to my heart.
The 21st century civil rights movement would address those issues and not get accepted gag order from the Democratic Party or from black faces in high places that want to keep profiting from this horrible condition. You know, again, Generation X, Generation Y. We were not born, or we didn't come to maturity in the same type of bleak apartheid world that our forebears do. We are not obligated to the group at the exclusion of our better interest. Because right now, the people who control the, quote, black group are in it for themselves. Our murder rate, our lifestyle mortality rate, our one-partisan addictions all indicate that behaviors are being promoted that do not benefit the rank-and-file black community. It does not benefit America. You know, the triumph, when we come up with a formula that allows us to triumph over these conditions, we also come up with a formula that will allow any American in any part of this country to triumph over dysfunctional social conditions. It will be at least as monumental an achievement as what the abolitionists did.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Listen, let folks know how they can get a hold of you, because I think it's important that we continue this. We're going to continue this conversation because this is the conversations that need to happen. They need to happen out loud. You know, I'll often make the joke. You know, are we airing our community's dirty laundry? But here's the deal: there's not a Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles big enough to have this meeting in private. There just isn't. So we got to have it out here.
But don't worry, bro. One day, in fact, invite me to Tampa. You know, let's go ahead and start running our mouths and organizing and getting out there in a more networked fashion and addressing these problems ourselves. You know, it does. You know, we all don't have to be on Fox News.
No, we sure don't.
violence. As long as we're saving lives and introducing people to the good of this country and not having them focus on, to the exclusion on the bad in this country, but you know what? We too will enjoy the good news of success and the good news of serving our fellow man where he is.
Well, you
know
what?
That's all I'm concerned about.
Really, I appreciate that. I do, and I got to tell you, in this past hour, that you've encouraged me, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that greatly, and you know, because that's important. You know, so sometimes we have to encourage each other. Not that we planned on quitting, but the encouragement does help. It does help.
Let me give some thanks to some people who've really been helpful, who are really out there. You've got Lynn Roberts, the Chief Operating Officer of the Frederick Douglass Liberty Message. You've got Keith Carl Smith, who is the vanguard person of
yeah.
Frederick Douglass Liberty Messengers. You've got Chris Arps, who is over moveonup.org. You've got Andrew Luck, who is over winning our great country group. You've got Shirley Hussar, who is, I'm just
yeah.
going to say her title, and you already know it, the Urban Game Changer.
That's my girl.
All right. You've got Lenny McAllister delivering the good news of conservatism and consensus building on many more TV, radio, and internet platforms I can name in this particular time period at least. And we have so many more people who believe in America and believe that our people are not second-class citizens and are worthy of first-class opportunities. My name is Nadja Enzi, a.k.a. Captain Black, Hood Conservative. If you would like to reach out to me, my number is 504-214-3082. You can also find me on Facebook, just C-A-P-T Black, the H-O-O-D Conservative. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You know, the bottom line is, conservatism for black folks has got to be far more than just beating up on the Democratic Party and Obama.
That is very true.
Mm-hmm. But part of the analysis does also include, upon occasion, having to beat up on them, because guess what? Liberals are beating the black community to its knees on a daily basis, and it's high time that we lifted our voice against them the same way we did the repressive measures of the 1960s.
Well, again, man, I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate you being an encouragement. And yes, sooner than you said, invite you to Tampa, and sooner than you think, you're gonna be headed to Tampa. you don't have any idea how soon, but sooner than you think, and we got to get some. Yeah, you'll be inside because we don't work on suntans here. Black people don't go outside. Because it's hot. We know it's hot. No, but we got a lot of work to do. You know, and I want to introduce you to some really, really exciting young people who need your encouragement. They do. They are working in the community, and they are working across political lines. They are working across socioeconomic lines, and they're doing the work. They're doing the work. They're not caught up in the D's and the R's and the I's. They're caught up in their community. So,
what I love about the reason why I even call myself Captain Black is because we have got to take charge of ourselves the way every other group of Americans have. And guess what? We can. Be your own superhero. That's what I tell people. The 7th Cavalry is you. It ain't coming from anywhere else.
That's very true. All right, brother. We appreciate you greatly. We do. We'll let you go. You've been gracious. You've been with us on an hour and 9 minutes, and without break. And we appreciate it greatly. Again, we hope to talk to you again real soon. God bless you. Have a fantastic holiday. Enjoy some family, and take a little time off because you know what? We're in it for the long haul.
That's right. All right, bro. God bless you, and God bless America.
All right, man. Good night now. All right. We're going to take a short break. Thanks ever so much for coming by and spending some time with us and encouraging us and really, really giving us some focus, because I think that somehow we forget. This show's always been about community, My heart's always been about how this whole political thing affects where I live and the people that I live around. Much bigger than any one political issue concerning a DNR or a particular candidate, whether it be President Obama or Mitt Romney or any of that stuff. It's really about all the stuff we do is really about how it affects people in your community. How's your community surviving? Is there economic development? How are the schools in your community? You know, what's the crime rate in your community? You know what? How's that? You know, how are people living? How are people actually living day to day? That's what it's really all about. Listen, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more of the Will Lawson Show right after these messages. We appreciate you.
Happy holidays, everybody. This is Dave Koz for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. When you're traveling during the holidays and see someone who's had too much to drink about to get behind the wheel of their car, get the car keys. Your friends will thank you for it because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that just 30 minutes a day of physical activity can improve your health and decrease your risk of heart disease? For every hour of regular vigorous exercise, you gain 2 hours of life expectancy. So start walking for yourself and for your heart. Start walking with your family. You'll feel better. Start walking in your community. You'll lead happier and healthier lives. Start walking. Start something. Join the movement today. For more information on the American Heart Association's START program, visit startwalkingnow.org and start walking. Start something.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. When you celebrate this holiday season, remember that life is very precious. If you're going to party, just plan ahead. Don't drink and drive. I repeat, do not drink and drive. And promise to designate a driver before you celebrate.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council. Yeah!
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. Ernie Els encourages you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Back to the Will Lawson Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you being there. We appreciate I'm Nandre Inzi for being on the show. I mean, it was great. It was what a great hour, and what an encouraging thing. What, you know what? And sometimes, you know, we get caught up in all the crap, basically, of a presidential election and all the hurt feelings and all the emotion of it. It's nice that someone has such a clear insight on where we need to be focusing, and it was great. Listen, we're going to start. We're going to bring on. I mean, we have some people who have their hands raised who want to get in this a little bit. We're going to go to the person who's been waiting the longest, who's been holding the longest, I think, according to the numbers here. We're just going to spend a little bit of time. All I ask when I have callers is that people are respectful, and if we agree, great. If we don't, that's fine too. We can still be we can disagree without being disagreeable. First from the 609, thanks for calling the Will Lawson Show. How may we help you this glorious afternoon?
Good morning, or actually good afternoon. My name is Kevin Williams. I'm the director and co-producer of the documentary film Fear of a Black Republican. I really enjoyed your interview you just had with Captain Black, and I just wanted to put forth much of what you all discussed really applies to everyone in urban America. And I'm a Generation Xer myself. I'm 44. And what I'm finding over time and, you know, 6.5 years of making our movie is we're really becoming trapped in an urban versus suburban battle between what's going on, particularly in urban areas, and much of that is directly influenced upon the African-American community and vice versa. But a lot of folks in the suburbs just really did not have an idea how the general electoral system and how our public policy is really benefiting themselves at the expense of what's going on in urban America. And that crosses folks from the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. And my wife and I are Republicans ourselves, really. And when we've done screenings around the country, it's been amazing how many people who are black come up to us and say, because we're white, and will tell us that you and your wife are the first Republicans I've ever met. And that's come from people who are in their 20s as well as older folks in their 60s and 70s.
I agree. Yeah. And you know what? That's one of the things that we battle here in my area that a few of us are battling. With the, for lack of a better term, with the establishment Republican Party, it's a horrendous term and I hate it, but that's the one that people get. The lack of input into those communities at any level, and we're looking at just put, you know, the lack of, which leads to a lack of credibility. You're absolutely right. It doesn't surprise me that the first time they go, "Golly, you're Republican," they look at you like you've come from Europe, so you're
yeah.
so you're from Europe, you know, and you're here.
Are you sure you're not lost?
Exactly. Are you sure you're supposed to be here? I know. I understand, and I think that, you know, and what we've been telling some of the more established Republicans is that we lack credibility in a lot of these communities, these urban communities, whether there's black folks or Hispanic or Latinos or whatever, is because all they hear about conservatives or they hear about Republicans is what's portrayed with mainstream media and our political opponents. So that's the only view they have of us, and they don't. And sometimes when you're characterized that way, you're not even human. So you're not flesh and blood. So you don't show up and go, "I'm human, and I do care what happens here because I care what happens everywhere."
And one of the things, if I might, we've been, and you mentioned this by going to city council meetings and mayoralships, how many people we've met by just being involved. We live in Trenton, New Jersey, going to city council meetings. When we've met other people in a city, they are shocked to even know that they can go to a city council meeting and express their point of view or their complaints, et cetera. And we sit back and say, "Well, are you, you know, what party affiliation are you?" "Oh, I'm a Democrat." "Okay, well, that doesn't matter. It's fine. But why didn't you know about this before?"
Yeah, that's true.
And it's really scary how many people, I would posit, have been deliberately kept from knowing what their rights are as citizens and how they can challenge their elected officials. And unfortunately, our party, the Republican Party, hasn't been in the room to rebut those charges of racism or bring your policies on their own terms, or just let alone tell people, this is what you can do to help yourself. Whether you vote for me or not, this is what you can do to help yourself.
Exactly. And what we're trying to build, what I want to build here is those community assistance offices. The people who live in those communities go, you know what, you can address your county commission, you can address your city council on things that concern you in where you live. And I think that's really, really important. And I think at the long term, what you'll get out of that is, oh, so these things that they keep saying we're supposed to disagree about, we actually don't. We're actually on the same side of this particular issue. And what you find out is that the whole process and people get humanized, and now these distinctions that's drawn by media and the people that that Captain Black was talking about, who benefit by the division, their power is sort of taken away from them by it. That's great. So tell me about the movie a little bit.
Yeah, well, our film Fear of a Black Republican. People can check out our trailers, etc. fearofablackrepublican.com. We try to look at why there's so few Black Republicans and what that means for the whole greater two-party system. And just came out of our own experience being Republicans here in Trenton and trying to get our own county party or state party to be more involved in the city and being kind of pushed back and, you know, kind of given the nod that they're interested. And what we found is when I tried to get even Bush door hangers in 2004, I was the first to deny the door hangers because our county party didn't want us to put the door hangers out in our city. They really, in a crazy way, thought we would rile up all the voters, Democrats, I guess primarily African Americans, to come out and vote Democrat, which would affect them in the suburban elections, in the statewide elections. And what we found, interviewing Michael Steele, Mitt Romney, even we've interviewed Cornel West and Tavis Smiley for the film, followed Catherine Davis, who ran for Congress in Georgia, a lot of different folks. This is a national phenomenon. It just wasn't a local issue. And our film, as we travel around the country, we went to Atlanta, New Orleans, all over. We even went to the birthplace of the Republican Party, Ripon, Wisconsin, in the little white schoolhouse. You just find everywhere that there's kind of like a gentleman's agreement between both parties that the Democrats, well, they're going to be running the urban areas. The Republican parties, they're going to mainly focus on the suburban areas. And then that's where they're going to fight that, because that's where the money and resources come from. That's where the money and resources, as we always find out, I think, each election go to. But one of the things that's been great for us in getting the movie out since we made it is there are people out there across the demographic spectrum, political spectrum, who are sick and tired of the presentation that's being made on television particularly and want to start working to find local solutions and get the party to come into urban areas on their own terms and really engage people. Because when we have, like Cornel West says, I think pretty eloquently in the beginning of the film, he makes a line that the Republicans would go solicit Martians and go after Negroes if it would help them win elections, and the Democratic Party will do anything they can to solicit Martians and keep their Negroes. But what it comes down to is the small d, democracy, and holding people accountable and what we're going to do about that. And then we have even Senator Edward Brooks in our film. And I asked him point blank about what happens when you have cities controlled by one party. And he quotes Lord Acton, you know, the famous quote about power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's just amazing the opportunities that the Republican Party's had over even the last 10 years before President Obama, before he gave that speech at the convention in 2004 and then decided to run a few years later. There are so many people like yourself who are conservative in the community that can be put forth as leaders. They just need to be backed by the party. They need to the party needs to come in and just sit down with the grandmas and have, like Michael Steele told us when we interviewed him, you bring the coffee, I'll bring the donuts, let's talk. And if we could start that now, 2012, we have 4 years to really get the ball rolling. You know, I don't think anybody's talking about 30, 40, 50% change in the African-American vote, but we can sure do a lot better than we've been doing.
That's
maybe get
true.
It to the 15 or 20%.
That's very true. All that's left to do is an effort. A real effort. When I talked to Chairman Steele a few years ago, he basically had outlawed the use of the word outreach in the office. But it's just about infusion. It's about moving into those communities and sitting down and having real, honest, open conversations about the things that affect people that they care about. That's what it's all about. Okay, so what's the website to the trailer? So let me write it down on.
Oh, it's www. Oh, sure, take your time. It's with people, and actually, we people can see our film on DVD as well as video on demand on iTunes and our own website, and the DVD is available for sale on Amazon. We're having a special for Black Friday, $15.95, and our own website. But our website is fearofablackrepublican.com. That's fearofablackrepublican.com. And we have several trailers. There's a great audience reaction page. People can see comments from individuals around the country who've seen our film. A lot of information. There's an FAQ page on why we made it, because that's always a very curious thing, particularly us being Republicans and us being white and us living in the city. Well, why do you care about these issues? It's really a great way, I think, for people to get an idea that we're all in this together. And I think once we realize that as a party also, but just individual citizens, we can affect a lot of change. And it doesn't need to be a lot of the crazy stuff that the media portrays. It said, now, God bless black conservatives. They go through, and we go into this in our film with local people. You know, when Gerald Ball, who's in our film, talks about just going to the supermarket, and the dirty looks he gets in the grocery aisles from people for being a Republican. It's just, you can't feel, but, and we've had people come in, Willie, for the screening, and they basically want to, you know, tear my wife and I apart coming in. And when they leave the theater after seeing the film or the emails after seeing the DVD, their hearts and their minds have been changed in a lot of ways. They're not going to necessarily vote Republican, but they look at what they've been getting in the whole overall system a lot differently.
Yeah.
And their views of black Republicans, which can be pretty tough, I think they get changed positively in a lot of ways.
Dude, I went to 7-Eleven, and we go to 7-Eleven in my neighborhood, where they, and 7-Eleven had this thing all over the country. They had Obama cups and Romney cups for coffee. And one afternoon, I went and got a Romney cup, and strangers, people you've never seen, will talk bad about you to your face about what coffee cup you're drinking out of.
That's amazing.
I just said, you know what, folks, I appreciate it. Here's the deal. Here's the best, you know, I asked the question, what's the best thing about freedom? And they looked at me and said, what? I said, your freedom. So I get to choose what cup I get to drink out of. And you know what, for the most part, people went, all right, that's true. Because you know what, the deal is that they know me and my family. We live there. We didn't come from somewhere else. We've been there all along. And again, the Republican Party can learn from that. That's the difference. All right, man. Listen, we're gonna get some folks out there. I'm gonna tweet out this. I'm gonna go to fearofablackrepublican.com and check out what you got there and see if we can help you get that movie out. Have you screened it down here in the lovely South? All right, he's gone. Anyway, let's see who's next. Who's next? My friend Stanley Gloucester, I think, is next. Waiting 26 minutes. Hey, what's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? I really enjoyed the interview, and I'm about to check out that website.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
pretty
great.
Cool. But, you know, the problem, the only problem I have to say about that is that the problem, the party has already realized what's going on, and they don't really care. No, it doesn't care. It ain't gonna say it's the people around at the bottom. It's the people in D.C. that doesn't care about changing about how they look at things.
No,
you know?
No,
so
they don't.
No matter what we say or do, it's up to them to want to change it. And you know, I don't know if you looked at this yesterday. You see, Governor Scott just endorsed Lenny Curry, so that just tells me why I just told people on Saturday, status quo, nothing's gonna change.
Oh, nothing of course is going to change. If Lenny Curry remains the chair of RPOF, nothing is going to change. I can't imagine why it would. I mean, nothing leads to me to think that. Well, if the leadership is still in place, why suddenly they're going to find religion, so to speak, and then get this, you know, this epiphany and go, oh yeah, we need to do something. Yeah, let's call the people who've been yelling at us for 3 years because they were right. No,
exactly.
I don't expect, you know what, although the chairman has my cell phone number, I don't expect that it'll ring and it'll be him. I just don't expect that. But I think that Nadrinzi has a great point, and the point is that, you know what, we have to circumvent all those forces, like, you know, like I talked about the Gang of 12. We have to kind of circumvent all those people, and you know, and get directly out in the community ourselves. Or maybe even build, even build new groups to get what we need to get done. Because some of the old things, you know, some of the old avenues, they're just not available to us. They're just not available to us. RPOF in Florida is not available to us. It just isn't.
No, it isn't.
So maybe we have, you know, maybe the deal is that we have to use new avenues, and that's fine. And that's fine if we have to go another way to get to the same place, then that's okay. But I'm encouraged, man. I'm encouraged by the brother. I am, because he's out there doing the work. He's out there doing exactly what we, you and I have said for a long, long time, that needs to be done in minority communities or urban communities around the country. Ours here in the Tampa Bay area included. That's the deal. Get out there amongst the folks, like these folks from New Jersey who did this movie, like Keith, who did this movie. And what they did was they're airing it in places where people don't understand. They're actually getting out there and interfacing and engaging with folks from urban America. And that is so important. And the National Party doesn't have any strategy. We've talked about this. My friend Shirley Huzar, who's in the chat room, we've talked about her, and I talked about this. And Shirley, my God, that woman's in California, so she's in hell.
he's living hell.
And you know what? I mean, those urban communities were, by the presidential campaign, they just wrote them off from the get. the Romney campaign had no intention on going to California at all for any reason. And I think that's a problem. That doesn't support any of those Republican candidates. It doesn't make inroads in any of those communities. And again, you and I said this before, Stanley. You know what? Oh, so you go into an area, you may not win that area, but you know what? But you will over time make gains, and those gains will work in those communities if you take the attitude is that everybody matters, that every community matters. So that's really what the deal is. All right, listen. Believe it or not, man, I have. This is how popular this show is. Let me. You know, and usually it's just you and I talking for an hour. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 calls waiting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy up in here. Listen,
this is what happens. Take a break, brother.
No, man, we're good. Listen, I'll give you a call after we get done and see what you guys are doing for Thanksgiving.
All right, then.
All right, take care. All right, peace. All right, let's go to the 773. 773, wow. Thanks for calling the Will Lawson Show. How may we help you?
Take a break, brother.
Yeah, right.
No, man, we're good. Listen, I'll give you okay. a call. Okay, I hear the echo from a few minutes ago.
All right, then.
Okay, take care. Okay, right. Can you turn that?
Let's go to the 773.
Oh, me.
Yeah, you. Turn your speakers down.
I did.
I'm glad. What's up? Thanks.
Hello there. I have been on hold for so long. I didn't think you were going to include a woman tonight.
How do you think that I'm married for almost 26 years? Are you kidding me?
Because you men talk as much as us women, and you have
yes,
to.
Yes, yes, and I know. I have a feeling in my spirit, and go, oh, wait a minute. No, I better press that button. And I did.
Well, thank you, because it's been tiring. I have the flu, so you'll have to bear with me. But I wanted to speak to you and Nadra. Did you see where I tweeted, I'm on the line?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I don't have Twitter up on my computer, but I did find you. Yeah, on my Twitter, on my phone.
Uh-huh, because I had been on hold for about 20 minutes. Then.
Yeah, I saw, and I apologize that you didn't, that Nadra is gone. But oh, there you go. I'm so sorry. But
it's okay. No, not really. But I forgive you.
Thank you.
I have the flu, so you'll have to forgive my voice. Okay. I'm a Chicago disabled actress. I have to tell you, first of all, I love the communication that you two had, and I don't know what it's going to take for us to learn. I am a disabled Chicago actress, President Clinton's first White House human rights case, taken for people with disabilities in the workplace. And at that time, they offered, to show you how we don't stick together, they offered my dad, who fought with General George S. Patton in World War II, an Arlington ground burial for everything he went through as a black soldier. Well, that burial never took place. To this day, I am on Twitter, under Flowers Joan, begging President Obama, and I sent him the paperwork to the White House. I can't get through to the White House. When I was Clinton's first White House human rights case, as I already explained, I got through to the liaison department like nothing. Now, you can't get through. One of the people in the comment line hung the phone up on me. It's ridiculous. Arlington National Cemetery has my dad's papers. This man fought in D-Day, Battle of the Bulge. He was in Normandy, northern France, the Rhinelands, Central Europe, and the Ardennes.
Wow.
And he was an ammunition handler on the front lines of war. Do you realize my dad was never given his medals at all? I got his medals January 24th after a year of research. In my radio interview with Navy SEAL Top Gun retired commander Tom Garcia on the American Hour show there on Facebook, go to April 19th and you will listen to what we knew at that point. But since then, I found out what my dad did and I got his medals. He had 5 bronze stars, which they consider an EAME campaign medal, with 1 silver service star. He had the World War II Victory Medal, the Honorable Service Lapel Button, and the American Campaign Medal. And yet, because black soldiers were treated so badly, this man is still in dirt, waiting on the White House to finish the offer that Clinton offered him the day he died, when I called the White House June 30th, 1993, because they made me their first case that January. Then I got a formal letter in February. No, I got the call in February from the White House, and then I got the formal letter that March. And it's been total red tape. People at Senator Durbin's office here in Illinois, I've begged them for a year and a half. They've hung the phone up on me. And if I was a white woman, would that have happened? I don't think so. And when you talk about how we have become and how we're so self-destructive with each other, you would have thought, with me on Twitter under Flowers Joan, that blacks would have said, okay, this woman may be disabled, but she wants to do the voiceover and acting work she's been trained in from little school up to college, because I'm great at it when I do it. But instead, I get no response. When it comes to my dad, on Facebook also, and Twitter, retired Canadian commander Carl Goddard has written 3 articles on my dad: Soldier of Patton's Army and Unmarked Grave, Request for Soldiers' Burial Goes Unanswered. And yet nobody has a heart, it seems, for this black soldier. And I get on there and I beg the black people. I tell them, look, I'm one of you. And I tell the actors, I'm one of you. Do you realize that this man helped to make history, and that in 2012, and at first it was 2011, and before that, 2010, I should not have to beg for human compassion for a soldier who gave his all and suffered from post-traumatic stress, and nobody knew. My uncle was in that war too, but he killed himself because when he came home, he couldn't take what he did.
And yet
the blacks on Twitter will not speak to me. I speak to actors out there and people who did civil rights before we came into something versus nothing, if you know what I'm saying, right?
I understand.
They do not talk to me. It is outrageous.
What's been the reaction from? I mean, because you said you called the White House and that's
Durbin.
And you called Durbin because those are. I mean, that's how through normal channels. That's how you normally get stuff.
Oh
done.
Yes, I mean that's how I got to the White House in the first case. Clinton was upset the way that I was being treated as a disabled person.
why
so
isn't,
that's how he made me his first case.
Why isn't it? I mean, why would? I mean, this seems to be. I mean, this seems to be, frankly, a no-brainer here for any of the administrations.
Exactly, and the first black president on top of it. Go on Twitter and look in my favorites and my tweets and look at the times and the conversations that I've had pleading with President Obama to honor this black soldier just as he honored the others. The White House Clinton administration, who made me their White House case for 3.5 years, off of that barrel when he died June 30th, 1993, black soldiers were never given their medals. That's how I got my dad's medals, with a year and a half of research.
I understand.
And the thing of it is blacks, as you said, both of you said, we don't stick together, we have no respect, we have no dignity, and we have no respect for our past. And I keep telling all those people out there, other soldiers have been honored through President Obama, yet why does he fail to honor a soldier of the greatest generation who helped to make history? And I pour my heart and my soul out to blacks, and I tell them, look, you don't talk to me. I said, you really have no reason not to talk to me, because I beg for the rights that my dad gave to all of you.
Tell me what your Twitter handle is again, Joan.
Flowers Joan. It's my name backwards.
Okay,
and
listen,
and even if you go under, right there on Facebook, I'm under Joan Flowers.
I got it.
Go into my wall and go as far back as you can, and you will see. I mean, even go back to 2010, and you will see how I have begged people to care about my dad. I get tweets for Tabor, the Jewish soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody will even tell me, Happy Veterans Day for your dad. We just had a holiday. Go on my tweets. You'll see. Nobody seems to have compassion for a black soldier.
I'll tell you what. I'm a brand new trooper in an organization, and I'm going to talk to some folks here, and I don't know if I can do anything. I can't promise anything.
Can I let you know something? The American Center for Law and Justice sent President Obama a letter. I have it in a PDF file. If you give me your email, I can send you that. I can send you the stories.
Don't send me that especially.
Okay.
You can send me at willie@willielawsonshow.com. Send me that in particular.
Willie.
And at willielawsonshow.com. Send me that. Huh? And I'm you know what? I can't promise anything, but I know a few folks around here, and maybe they can help, because these kind of stories bother me when black soldiers who served like your father served, their memories go unheralded, and their accomplishments go unheralded, and that just shouldn't happen. It's just
Willie,
not
tell
right.
me this. Why do I have to beg on Twitter? Not the whites, they talk to me on Twitter, but not one.
Well,
let me take that back. Two blacks will talk to me, the others won't. Why?
What has
this man done that he deserves to be in dirt with no name and no rank? So I ask President Obama to give him his rank. I mean, can you imagine, Willie? A soldier fighting today in 5 wars and being left as a private?
I agree. Listen, do me a favor, too. Have you listened to the Exceptional Conservative Show with Ken McClinton here on Public Radio?
No, I haven't. You know, I'm basically...
I understand, but if you get an opportunity to, he's asking that you call him this evening at...
Who?
If you can.
Would you give me his name again?
His name is Ken McClinton. He does the Exceptional Conservative Show.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
And he'd love to talk to you this evening. So listen, if you go ahead and send me that PDF,
mm-hmm.
I will send you this afternoon his contact information. And
okay.
And I'll send that back to you.
Okay, then.
And then I'll see what, you know what, again, I can't promise anything, But we'll see how far we can move this, okay?
Can you ask me this, answer this? Why should I have to beg a black man who has so much? You see him honoring other people? You catch my drift? You have seen that, right?
I understand.
I've been begging him since he became president. In fact, he used to follow me on Twitter.
Really?
And when I, as long as I told people, give him time, he's new, he was fine with me. But the minute I started asking for his help, he unfollowed me.
I understand. Well, you know what? We're gonna do whatever we can do. We're gonna do whatever we can do. All right.
All right, Willie. I love your show.
Thank you, honey. I appreciate it.
Keep
thank
up
you so much.
With the respect and dignity. I am proud of you and Nadra as black men, and we've got to take a stand because you know my dad fought against Hitler, who wanted to dominate. Now look at us. We're giving him, I bet you, in his ashes, he's laughing at us because he said that we were inferior. We're not, but we're acting it.
Oh, you know what? We have a ways to go, and we have a ways to get back to, because I think that, you know, and you've heard me say this, I think that, you know, the black people were the center of the of civilization on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
We invented all the major sciences that are the basis for all the things that we enjoy today in technology and science.
Even peanut butter.
And even something as yummy as peanut butter. But you know what? And I think that we need and that we can get back to that sort of greatness where we actually lead the society in a way that it is beneficial to us and the society in general. Listen, go ahead and send me that, and I will send you Ken's information, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, so you want me to send you only that right now?
Yeah, right now, just send me the letter that you got from the
American Center for Law and Justice.
Now,
when you look at the top of it, Willie, that's their introduction telling me, you know, Jim, we sent the letter to the president. The PDF file is all the way at the bottom.
No worries, I'll find it.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Jim.
I'm honored that you talked to me. It was worth the wait.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to help.
I just have to say that when you talked about the two of you, how we are so self-destructive and we need to get the pride and people need to speak out, I had to get in.
I appreciate it. No worries.
So thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving. And
happy
if I don't talk to you, Merry Christmas. Can I say one last thing and then I'll let you go? My brother that served as a Marine in Vietnam, we're going to take him off life support next week.
You know what? You know what? God bless you and your family as you go through these really hard times. You know, God is that who won't ever put anything more on us than we can handle. And we know that at some point you will see them again in their new bodies. And it's going to be good. It's going to be good. So just hang in there. And we'll talk and we'll communicate again soon. Again, send that,
okay,
send,
Willie,
send that
thank
to me today.
You so much.
You're very
I
welcome.
Will send it to you now.
Very good. Looking forward to it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you now. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a second with more of the Willie Lawson Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Great show today. I'm having a fabulous time. Hi, my name is Willie Lawson, The Willie Lawson Show. Listen, it is almost 2013. It's pretty amazing that this show has been on since March of 2008, and we're still here. I've got to let you know, this has been one of the best years for the show in its history. As a matter of fact, we have more listens, and we have been able to do more. Through your help, we've been able to broadcast from Radio Row at the CPAC Florida, the Republican National Convention, and we were asked to partner with Grass Fire Nation and Liberty News Network to cover the elections in November. It has been a fantastic year for the show. You know what? You're right. The national elections maybe should have turned out better, could have turned out better, but that doesn't stop us. We still have things to do, and we can't do them without your help. In January, we have planned an ad buy with Talkers Magazine. Talkers Magazine is an industry standard for radio talk shows like The Willie Lawson Show, and we're going to need your help. We won't be able to do it without your help. So what I need you to do is to go to the WillieLawsonShow.com website and click the donate button right under my picture. You know what? Anything that you can do to help will make liberty happen in this country, because that's our goal. You know what? We're also planning a conservative urban initiative that's going to go forward, and that needs your help too, because we are the ones that can make the difference. We have left it to the parties too long. Now it's time for you and I to make the difference. So go to the WillieLawsonShow.com website and click the donate button at the top of the page. So thank you ever so much.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. Every child deserves to have access to books, because children who grow up with books invariably do better in life than children who do not. How do I choose a book? Is it the cover? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual, so it's the combination of those two. The first book I remember was Captain's Courageous. When I finished that book, I had become so involved with these characters. So here's the thing. If a book's really, really impressing me and the writing is really, really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is. Because the endings of books, if it's really, really well done, that ending, that last thought should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the U.S. and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the U.S. Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. Ernie Els encourages you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hey, well, again, welcome to the Willie Lawson Show. Thanks so much for coming. We appreciate it. It's been great today. It really has. It has been great. This has been a great show. I'm just so with Nadra Enzi being on and the callers, and it's just been great. It sort of renewed my faith in the ideal of local. These national issues that we're dealing with are all solvable one community at a time, and that the impetus is not put on national candidates, whether that be Barack Obama or Mitt Romney or any of these people, really. The impetus for the solution of these problems, especially in our community, is put on us, me. You know, it's that whole idea that when I look in the mirror, And after, you know, being on this show and telling folks, the deal is, why are you, you know what you've been telling people that you need to get involved. And I looked at myself one morning and I said, well, what the heck are you doing other than telling people to get involved? And that's what, you know, what prompted me to run for county commission, and get involved with, you know, get involved in that, you know, at that level, that it was time, you know, it was time for me to get involved and get involved at a deeper level. And, you know, and while I was running and even still, you know, hey, why aren't you serving with that particular group and on that board and helping in this way and really getting my, you know, getting my hands into what's going on in the community where I live. And I learned that is really the compassion that drives me. It isn't some, you know, some from on top Republican from, you know, from the offices of the GOP in Washington, D.C., agenda that drives me. It just isn't. It's not some from Tallahassee down, you know, down out I-10 down 75 to my house agenda from Lenny Curry and the Republican Party of Florida that drives me. It's not even the Hillsborough County Republican Executive Committee agenda coming from Brandon, Florida, you know, down Highway 62 to my house that drives me. It's not, you know, it's not entirely about getting Republicans elected that drives me. It's about when I drive through my community as a 52-year-old man, and I remember what it was like when I was a 15-year-old kid, and when I have not seen the improvement, when I haven't seen the changes that have happened in other parts of my city, other parts of my county, I haven't seen the prosperity where the people who live where I live, a lot are more desperate than ever. And now we're talking about the people who are children of the people I grow up with. My son's 21 or 22. Living a more desperate lifestyle than I did. And now I look at, you know what, that wasn't, you know what, and frankly, that's not President Obama's fault. That's not Mitt Romney's fault or Bill Clinton's fault or George Bush's fault. It isn't. It's about how our community has been run and who it's been run by. Because that's the only constant. That's the only thing that makes any sense. I just can't believe that George Bush or Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter woke up one morning and said, hey, listen, let's make things suck in East Tampa. They didn't. But there's a litany of folks who have run roughshod over my community for their own political and financial gain for years. That's the problem. That's the deal. And that's what drives me. And that's what makes me go ahead and, you know, take all the name calling and whatever all that is. Because I care about where I live and I care about the people who live there. And although we may be precariously close to losing the generation, I won't stop fighting. And I don't want you to stop fighting either. I want you to fight smart. I want you to fight smarter. I want you to fight more efficiently. I want you to build coalitions where there were no coalitions before. Build organizations where there were no organizations before. I want you to interface with those that are in the, quote, establishment, end quote, that are caring and compassionate and understand. And for the rest, well, you can get them later. Because it's about the survival of a community. Not the election of a party, but the survival of a community. Again, thanks so much for coming today. It has been fabulous today. It's been a great, great, great day. And we appreciate everybody who's been on, all the callers, the folks who are in the chat room. Again, my guest, Nadra Enzi. Thanks, Joan, for calling me and for calling. We appreciate it. But until I see you again, go out there and love somebody, learn something, and for goodness sake, take care of yourself.